You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
And we are back, Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right here in the Right Side studio. That was a good long interview with Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth. Glad to have his availability just to shed some light. I think it's important that every once in a while you hear from an elected official and get a feel for who they are as a person. And also, by the way, recognize they are people. All right. They're not ivory tower. Now, some of them can forget. Some of them can totally forget that they're, you know, not supposed to sit in the ivory tower. I think that's exactly what happened to Liz Cheney. I think she got totally ivory tower mode. I know things. I know things that you don't know. I am here for the greater good, and you need to understand that. All right, vote them out. And that's exactly what happened. She lost sight of her mission, which was to take care of her constituents and to enact policies and to drive legislation that would benefit America from a conservative standpoint, because she said she was, but she got so anti-Trump she couldn't see anything else. She didn't know what else to do. Anyway, but it's important that you also see that your state by the way, I'll say this. I spent those 8 years in Montgomery. I am convinced, y'all, convinced that more impacts our life daily out of what comes out of our state capitals very often than what comes out of D.C., You may think I'm crazy, but think about it. The amount of tax you pay at the gas pump, the amount of, I don't know, number of jobs available in your community, whether or not you're allowed to text and drive, can you have Sunday alcohol sales in your community? All of that is a Montgomery issue here in Alabama. I mean, right down to literally, what is the amount that you can have for teachers in schools? What is the education budget? And so, yeah. Montgomery does things that impact your day-to-day far more than what you get out of D.C. at times. And you need to know those people are accessible. And I hope you just caught a glimpse there as we're talking to a guy who's only a couple years older than Boomer, went to school with Boomer, but he's a lieutenant governor of the state. He's like, you know, one heartbeat away from being the governor of the state. I don't say that disparagingly, just is. And then at the same time, he's a businessman. He's a family man. And you know, there you go. All right, we're going to get into number two of the Triple Dipper now. It is the Green New Steel. Oh, man. And by the way, this first story I've got, well, I see I got a caller, so I'll take that first. But the first story I've got, I don't know about this, man. I'm a muscle car fan. What are they doing to muscle cars? Well, the Green New Deal is stepping in. The Inflation Reduction Act, see into that. It's not just IRS agents. It's also a whole lot of billions being thrown out there to subsidize, literally to prop up the renewable energy sector. Wait, you got a call, Boomer? We good? Yeah, let me grab that real quick. Line two. Hey, it's Sparky. Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, bud?
Hey, Phil. Enjoying the show today and your last caller.
Yeah, thanks, man.
I just feel like the Obama administration just threw trillions of dollars in two stimulus packages at the green industry, and mainly it went straight into the pockets of personal buddies who represented themselves to be in those industries. And I think we're watching the same thing. It's not crony capitalism, it's just crony slush. And I reflected listening to the last guest, the lieutenant governor, and I feel strongly that our leaders in Alabama, are, by and large, have always struck me as very honest, forthright people. You know, they're going to talk politics every now and then. They're going to talk slightly vague every now and then. But they're not liars. And I just wonder how in the world you can have a state that's in a budget surplus with honest leaders and politicians, and then contrast to that on the Washington, D.C. level and inside the Washington I don't even want to call it a swamp. I want to call it a cesspool. and say, how in the world can people go operate where grotesque open dishonesty is just the way of things? Dirty deals, putting money in your own pocket and putting money in your friends' pockets to the detriment of the American taxpayer. I've never understand how it's Washington D.C. has devolved into that. I wish I had a chance. Well, you served at the state level, and I respect you for that. What's your thoughts on what's the difference? Is it purely cultural, or is it were we just raised right?
Well, and I will say, Sparky, a great question, and I'll point out I have met some very dishonest people in Montgomery, so they are there. No, and there's also, believe it or not, I learned there is a deep state in Montgomery too. There are bureaucrats entrenched in Montgomery that don't want anybody to rock their boat. And when we got elected in 2010, we came in with a mandate to downsize government, which it was an uphill climb. We consolidated departments. We cut people. We allowed for, you know, natural attrition to take place and not rehire. But, you know, the thing we see out of D.C., now I'll be honest with you, part of that is going to wind up being that I think the press helps to polarize. And I know everybody in our current congressional delegation. And, you know, Terry Sewell being the only Democrat, but all of them are actually really good dudes. And then you also look at some of the ones that are up there, some of the knuckleheads, and you think, man, I don't get it. And I think part of that is they stay there too long. They forget their purpose. I think the other is they get so used to being in the job where they make decisions and people say, oh, thank you, Congressman, that they begin to think more of themselves than they ought. And that's when the danger sets in. That's one of the reasons why I think term limits would be so helpful.
Yeah, if I could put it, I don't have any tattoos on my body, but I would wear a T-shirt 24/7 if I was in D.C., and it would be all caps, term limits.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate you and Boomer, and y'all have a good rest of the day.
All right, Sparky, appreciate you as always. He made a great point as he opened up that phone call there, Sparky did, about the fact that this Green New Deal, it just gives a whole lot of slush to a whole lot of folks. Well, let me start off by saying, so I'm a muscle car guy, all right? I love Jeeps and muscle cars. When they have wheels on them. I mean, I don't diss on motorcycles. I don't diss on like European, you know, sports cars. None of that. But my passion has always been Jeeps and classic muscle cars. And within the classic muscle car, I love some of the stuff that has come forward. Like I still love my first car was a '68 Mustang, but my first, you know, love is the 60s, early 70s muscle cars. And I love some of the styling cues that have happened with the current, you know, era muscle cars and Mustangs and the Challengers and Chargers. I mean, I'm a Ford guy, but you could lure me away with a Hemi Cuda or a Challenger or a Charger. I did. Oh, man. So I start off the Green New Steel segment here with a story that makes me go, what are they doing? So here's the headline, FoxNews.com dated yesterday. The Dodge Charger Daytona SRT is a bad electric muscle car that screams like a banshee. An electric muscle car. You know, I saw an ad on TV the other day for a show on, I won't say what network and all that. It's almost like an ad. Well, why not? I'll just do it. Motor Trend. I watch the Motor Trend channel a lot. That's like my Saturday morning cup of coffee TV go-to. And so I'm sitting there watching it, and they're doing a commercial for a show that's not on yet, and it has a guy showing at a trade show how for electric cars, they've got the recordings of the sounds of exhaust, so you feel like you're in a real muscle car. Well, I got news. That's weird. But Dodge is doing away with internal combustion engines in both the Charger and the Challenger. No more. No more Hellcat motors. No more SRTs. The new Dodge Charger Daytona SRT concept is a battery-powered muscle car that will launch in 2024. 2023 is going to be the last time you can buy a gas-powered muscle car in the Charger and Challenger models. I'll be honest with you, This feels like blasphemy to me. I find myself disturbed at my core right now. Now, they say this, and it's the kind of thing where if someone out there wants to take Phil Williams on a ride in this particular, you know, concept car, I'm for it. And I'll report on what I see, call the balls and strikes as I see them, because they say the electric platform Charger Daytona SRT is going to be built with a dual motor powertrain that has up to 885 horsepower. Okay, got my attention. It says it's capable of accelerating from 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds. What the heck? And they also say, by the way, that it will have the sound of exhaust, because rather than having a recording of it, they put tubes with baffles in them that will have air fans blowing through them to create the sound of exhaust. But this is all part of the green. If they're killing muscle cars with their green policies, then I'm automatically lost to you. All right, I am not your green. I will never be sympathetic if the muscle cars go away. How many of y'all remember a movie? Boomer. This is before your time. But there was this guy. I never could settle with him as an actor. Something about his face bothered me. His name was Christopher Makepeace. That was his name, Makepeace. But then there was Lee Majors, who was a $6 million man when I was growing up. That was the heat. All right. So they had a movie called, I think it was called the Last Race or The Last Run, something like that. Lee Majors played in the future. They had gone all electric. I mean, it seems so outlandish when this movie came out in like the late 70s, early 80s. It seemed outlandish. Electric cars. Please, give me a break. And he was a Formula race car driver who became the poster boy for the electric car industry, and he hated his life. Hated it. So he had buried his last Formula One car under the floor of his garage. And it turns out that you could live free in California, which is the complete opposite of reality. And so he broke out his gas-powered Formula Racer and took off from New York to California. And their electric cars trying to chase him down. And he's hitting the open highways in like post-apocalyptic America and just gunning. And he'd have to stop occasionally and siphon gasoline out of old gas stations. But he just kept running that sucker until he got to free California.
I've not seen this. Now I have to.
Well, I'm for establishing Alabama as a state where you can still drive gas-powered muscle cars,
yes,
and feel like you're living in free America.
Yes.
Take me to a break before I preach. Like all right, we're going to come right back. We're talking about the Green New Steel. They're doing away with muscle cars. What else are they doing? And by the way, who's benefiting from this Inflation Reduction Act billions of dollars to subsidize the green energy sector? I got news. There's people making a lot of money off of it. I'll tell you all about it when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. We're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. And I do not say that euphemistically. Okay, so continuing on this thread here, the Green New Steel. So there's a lot of stuff you need to know. I mean, first of all, like upwards of half of the $738 or $39 billion Inflation Reduction Act, I do say that euphemistically, was dedicated to green energy and the green energy sector and ensuring that we build out. But it's going to be an uphill climb. And I say that because we're not poised for this now. And it set standards and guidelines. Now, listen, I'm for domestic production, all right? I want to see domestic production of everything we rely on. And if we're going to say that if they're going to drive us to the point that we have to have a battery-powered car, which I'm not for, you know what? Here's the thing. I don't mind battery-powered cars. And if you can show me a muscle car or a Jeep that I can enjoy, okay, that is electric powered, I mean, okay. But understand this. I don't think we are there yet where I can say, hey, I'm going to go visit my family out of state and know that I can get in my electric car, which you're going to mandate that I have to have one day soon, and get there without having to stop multiple times to charge it over and over again. And oh, by the way, I know I stopped for gas along the way now. Yes, it's a 12-hour drive to visit my grandbabies. But I know for a fact that me stopping for gas takes a matter of minutes. And stopping to recharge an EV right now takes a great deal of time. I mean, like, you may be sitting there for quite a while. And oh, by the way, too, unless you got, like, a station that has 50, 60, 70 charging stations, what are you going to do? You're going to be waiting in line for 30 minutes for someone to finish charging so you can pull up to the station and charge for 45 more minutes. At that point, I mean, in other words, it doesn't work. I believe that our engineers could put a man on the moon in the 60s. We can certainly get to the point that we can see this kind of technology happen. But the idea that we're going to mandate it and force billions of taxpayer dollars to subsidize an industry that the private sector should be gaining hold of. The private sector should be the one driving this train. But instead, government is not only mandating it, government is subsidizing it. That's where you get into a risk. That's where the government is now picking winners and losers. Here's a deal. TheHill.com, dated 2 days ago, August 16th. Jennifer Dunn wrote a story in The Hill titled, Inflation Reduction Act, Sourcing Materials and Making Batteries Are Challenging. She points out, she's an engineer, she wrote this. She says that she's at the center of developing and deploying clean energy technology in record time. But she said these technologies include the batteries for electric vehicles, a centerpiece of the legislation, and a longtime foundation of strategies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But she says it lays out some pretty tough and dramatic engineering challenges for developing the battery technology. She says scaling up battery production in the U.S. is going to be a cornerstone of it, but the EVs only receive a tax credit if their batteries meet certain criteria, one of which is it has to be manufactured domestically. Well, okay, Phil, why don't we just build it here locally? We can do that, right? Because she points out the materials to do so are not readily found in the United States. Lithium, copper, manganese, nickel, cobalt, those are the key parts of what make a battery work, she points out. And she goes on to say, the U.S. is not a dominant producer of any of these metals. Chile produces 25% of the world's lithium, but does not also make batteries. 70% of cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, believe it or not, and 15 to 20% of that is mined by hand. And the cobalt is then exported, generally speaking, to China, where it's used in battery production. She goes on to say, then there's supply chain risks that such an international supply chain entails. So we look at the fact that if we're going to make ourselves dependent then upon battery production, we have to recognize we don't have here what it takes to make the batteries. So if somebody cuts off that level of supply chain, well, then we're in a very difficult spot. So I get it. We can drill for oil. We can have an all of the above policy. But if you make it all about battery power, battery power, battery power, you better understand we can't dig a hole in our current backyard and get all the things it takes to make those batteries. We're going to rely on other nations. We're not going to be energy independent, even though we're making the batteries domestically. All we're doing there is putting somebody else's stuff together to make it. I got more on this. I got a lot more on this. You're going to want to hear it. And if you want to call in, 833-68-RIGHT, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, spanning south of Birmingham to north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And as always, solid conservative and just plain right. Okay, so I got two callers on the line. I'm going to jump over to them in just 1 second, but just in case, I want to make sure I get this piece out. So I pulled this story off the Competitive Enterprise Institute's website. CEI.org, dated August 11th, so just about, a week ago. It says, how the Inflation Reduction Act favors unions over taxpayers. Here's the other thing that happened in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, especially in the green energy sector, all right? All that money, $370 billion of it, is being spent on green energy projects. It props up a whole section. It subsidizes basically the solar panel industry, wind industry, all of it, all right? And, of course, electric cars. Every section of the act uses the term prevailing wages. Key term, prevailing wages. Why is that so important? Because prevailing wages is actually defined in the law. It authorizes the government to pay out or to require payments to the taxpayer or contractor or subcontractor paid at wages not less than the prevailing rates for that region of the country. This is in accordance with what's known as the Federal Davis-Bacon Act. What this means is no contractor is allowed to offer the government a better-than-average deal on labor costs. And there was a study quoted in this particular article. A study by the Beacon Hill Institute found that the prevailing wage rules generally increase wages on a job by 20% on average and boost construction costs by up to 7%. And all that falls back on the taxpayers. The bottom line here, as it points out in the article, it ensures that unionized contractors are not at a disadvantage when they bid for federal projects. In other words, you're going to have to pay the union rate. Even if you want to try and competitively bid and come in lower, you're going to pay the union rate in order to get the job under the green energy sector provisions of this brand new Inflation Reduction Act. That is not saving. In fact, they even called it out. The Blue-Green Alliance, a coalition of union environmental groups, came out and said, the robust investments included in this package will support and create good union jobs. There you have it. Unions got a big victory out of their allies in D.C., and it's going to mean that all this stuff that we're talking about is more expensive than it has to be. All right, there's that. Let me jump on the phones real quick. I think, is it line one first? Line one, Allie. Oh, is that Allie? Allie from Athens. How you doing, my friend?
I am doing well. And if I were going to put a label on this as a segment, what I would say is, okay, which is it? And I'll explain. I'm going to sound like the ancient of days when I tell you that back in the day when the environmental movement was born, the focus, the virtue signaling focus was, we don't want to use any electricity. So if you were a good person, you would do your very best to pedal your bicycle and burn your candles and burn your wood fire and go back to the land, and you wouldn't use any electricity because, wait for it, we were going to save the environment. And so now what we're going to do is save the environment by doing the very thing that we said was really naughty 50 years ago.
Yeah.
How's that work? Which is it?
Yeah. You know what's also funny, too, aside from the ecological disasters being put on some places by the mining of the cobalt and all that kind of stuff. You've also got to look at what does it take to charge up these vehicles? And it takes a power grid, and most of the power grids are sustained by coal-fired plants. So,
yep.
Okay. Plug in your electric vehicle and burn more coal. That's what it boils down to. Might as well have coal-burning cars. Thanks, Allie.
Yep.
Appreciate you.
All right.
Have a good one. I got line three. Let me grab that real quick. Marty from Hartsel. Marty, how you doing?
I am wonderful. How are you today?
I'm good, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a little bit nervous. First time I've ever called into a radio show, so bear with me, please.
You're good enough. Go ahead.
All right. Just to follow up on the Will Ainsworth interview.
Yeah.
Talking about school choice. And I'm older. I don't have kids at home in school anymore. But I'm in my fifth house. And other than my first house, one of the main considerations was school system.
Okay.
And I've heard about school choice ever since I've lived in Alabama. And it's all a lot of talk. What is his plan, or what is the Republicans in power plan to overpower the teachers union? Because it seems to me like every time it comes up, they squash it.
Yep.
I mean, what can they do?
Well, right now, what they can do is what we did. You may already know, I was in the state senate for 8 years. We passed some of the first major legislation on school choice in 2013, I think it was. And I was there that night. It was one of the best moments of my 8 years down there, when we literally passed the first education related bill that had not been pre-approved by the teachers union. I mean, it was like just epic fun. But all that to say, there is not much appetite right now among the current membership of the Republican supermajority. One of the things that I'm concerned about, Marty, to be honest with you, is back when I was in, we had a kind of a standing rule. We didn't take money from the teachers union for our campaigns. 40% of Republicans in Montgomery are now taking money from the teachers union as part of their campaign funds. And I think that's a problem. So we got to get a mindset change. We got to make sure that they understand they've got to do something different than what they're doing, because the same old ain't working.
I agree with that 100%. It's just, what do we do about that 40%? I vote the way, I research and I vote, but not everybody does. You know, everybody says, you know, term limits or anything like that. Term voting is the best term limit, ever. And unless you know what your people are doing, you know, they always say, vote the bums out, but not by my bum, because he's my.
you are right. I like my bum. I see my bum at church. Don't do that. But yeah, you're right. The fact is, we did have a cycle this time around where a number of active Republicans drew primaries, and it shocked some people. And there are several freshmen coming in this next time around who I know are very conservative. I've had a few on my show, and they ran against a incumbent Republican as Republicans. And they won, in part because they came in with a far more conservative message, and they were able to show the things that person had done while they're in Montgomery that were not conservative. So I think you're on point, bud. I think we got to make sure that people get to the polls. But before that, they got to recruit candidates that do the things that they want done. That's the important part. Marty, got to run, man. Thanks so much for the call. You did good on your first time around. Call in more often.
All right, I will. I'll save the number in my phone, okay?
All right, good enough. All right, listen, you want to call in? If I got another call, I do. I'm sorry. I'm about to bump right over. Let me go to line two. JT from Lacey Springs. JT, how you doing?
Doing quite well this day. And yourself?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. What's on your mind?
I was just sharing with Boomer about reading a tidbit a few weeks ago. They compared, if I recall proper, a electric F-150 and a gas-powered F-150 as far as towing.
Yeah,
they could each could equally tow a given load, but the let's just say they were towing 3,000 pounds, whatever the number was, I don't recall. But nevertheless, the electric vehicle stopped at 90 miles. It run down.
90 miles?
90 miles. And, of course, the gas-powered vehicle went on to most of 300 miles.
What? Yeah, that, if you're taking your kids to school to move them into the dorm, and you got a trailer full of stuff, you may be going more than 90 miles to get it done.
More than likely. Yeah. This is correct.
Well, I mean, we'll wait and see how far this goes. But, you know, what's going to wind up happening is, today is considered to be a very mobile society. It's not uncommon for people to not live in the same town they grew up in because it's so mobile. But if they start putting us in places where we can't get more than 90 miles without running out of a charge, we're going to go back to people never leaving their own home counties as they grow up.
Yeah, just think if I go back to the horse and wagon, what the price of hay is going to be.
JT, appreciate you. Thanks for the call, man. Yeah, Boomer, 90 miles. That's
so short.
I mean, that's like nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, I used to joke with one of my buddies who was in the state senate up in Huntsville area, Madison, actually, Bill Holtzclaw, because the population is so compressed up there. There's so many people in a small amount of ground. He didn't have to drive very far. Me, I had a lot of rural area in my Senate district. I had parts of four counties. It took me an hour and 10 minutes to get from one end to the other end of my district. I mean, I couldn't go see my constituents if I was going to run out in 90 miles.
No, I mean, like, I just moved back from Nashville, and I was driving easy 150 a day just because of how far
a day.
I was. Yeah, and so, yeah, I would be just staying overnight, you know, at wherever I was working, and I guess I'd charge it up and then come on back the next day.
And then when you talk about charging it up, I was talking to Allie on the phone a minute ago.
Right.
And the reality is, you know, when you ask them, so where's the electricity comes from that charges all these electric vehicles? Well, It comes from coal-fired power plants.
So you're saying what happened, you told us, that was so bad, so, you know, a long time ago, is now good?
Yeah, and let me ask you this. Riddle me this, Batman. So you got, what would you imagine would be the lowest, in a 24-hour period, what is the lowest draw on the electric grid? What time of day do you think?
Well, it should be at night,
at
right?
At night, yeah.
But if they have all these dang electric cars,
everybody's plugging in overnight.
Then the electric bill is just going to skyrocket, and then will it really be better on your financial pocket either?
All that and 90 miles of towing.
Can't even, you know, most people couldn't even take their boats, if they have boats, to the lake and back again.
And fake exhaust pipes on your car.
Oh, with the speakers?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Makes me mad. Have a subwoofer in your back so you can sound like you have exhaust. That's just awful. All right. Take me to a break, brother. We'll do that. We'll come back and wrap this thing up. I only got two dippers done again today, Boomer. Of course, we had a whole hour with Will Ainsworth, but yeah. All right, folks, we'll come right back. I'm wrapping it up when we get back. You want to call in, you're welcome to at 833-68-RIGHT. Green New Steel, that's where I am. Be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. All right, so we're sitting here in the Right Side studio wrapping up our day. Time now, 4:52 p.m. I'm in this section I call the Green New Steel. Let me tell you one thing that's in there that you need to know. So the two things that to me were the big, like, slush fund giveaways. One was, I told you a little bit earlier, I just dropped it over here on the floor, but here's another article of the same topic, that the new bill requires the use of prevailing wages in all of the subsidized projects that the bill contemplates. Prevailing wages is special language to be in compliance with what's known as the Davis-Bacon Act, which basically means union wages. You're required to pay union wages. In other words, you cannot have a competitive wage built into your bid on a job. You have got to use a union-based level, which typically drives up construction costs by 7%. It typically drives up the labor costs by roughly 20%. You're looking at major increases in the cost of these projects. But here's the other one. You know, corporate welfare. I understand incentivizing corporations like to come to Alabama or whatever else, but you got to have clawbacks in those contracts. You got to have a cap on the level you're going to go to. But this, the corporate welfare in this bill is unbelievable. And why is that? It's mostly because the wind and solar and green energy sectors are not self-sustaining. They do not have the infrastructure nor the capability to compete with the oil and gas industry. So what does the government do? Well, when the government picks winners and losers, it helps pay the cost of the guy who can't build the better mousetrap. So we have now in this bill, our legislation literally has $370 billion in energy-related spending, and it is filled with pork and tax credits to help prop up these industries. Big wind and big solar, in the article I've got here from thehill.com, big wind, big solar, $126.9 billion in new federal tax credits between now and 2031. And if that occurs, the total cost of the federal giveaways will actually nearly double that, actually, and get to around $240 billion. Whew. Then you've got special tax credits for solar and wind that will cost the federal treasury $112 billion. The investment tax credit will cost taxpayers about $60 million. The production tax credit, the PTC, will expire at the beginning of this year. It's used by the wind industry. It's going to cost $52.9 billion. Then you've got, for comparison, the oil and gas sector, only about $29 billion. And the nuclear sector, only about $3 billion. So what I'm saying here is, you are looking at epic levels of giveaways because there's a section of the energy industry overall that cannot compete on its own. I will never forget being in a hearing. I've told it before on this show. My friend Barry Moore, who is now a congressman down in South Alabama, He was in the state legislature. I was fighting against a giant wind farm company that was trying to build next to beautiful farmlands on a ridge in Etowah County, Shinbone Ridge, up Highway 411. And this wind farm company was standing there in the committee, and my friend Barry says, I want to ask one thing of you, Mr. Pioneer Green Man. That was the name of their company. He said, if you didn't have all your federal subsidies, could you survive as a company? And the guy just stared at him. He said, I want to know the answer. And to his credit, the guy said, no, sir, we could not. That's it. They can't compete. So the government picks the winners and losers. And the government says, yeah, we'll pay a whole bunch of tax dollars because you can't build the better mousetrap. We'll pretend it's the better mousetrap, but we'll underwrite it for you. That's our tax dollars at work, trying to help the non-competitive be more competitive. Hey, I got a caller on line five. That's Jeff. Yeah, Jeff from Indiana. How you doing, bud?
Doing pretty good, Phil. Come on, man. They're going to put a fan in a muscle car to make it sound like
yeah.
a muscle car that has a motor?
Can you believe that? I mean,
it's going to sound like a John Deere tractor or what? Pop, pop, pop.
I just
come on.
I look at it, I'm thinking, what the heck? If you don't want to have the combustion engine, don't try to pretend you do by having the sound effects. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, and this is going to pull a lot more watts than the speaker would. I'm thinking that you've got to pull the fans loud enough to make a noise.
Well, you know what?
I mean, come on.
But that's, you know, what's funny is there's another company out there, I talked about it too, that just has a soundtrack that is tied to your engine, and it will actually increase if you it'll increase the sound if you're accelerating, and it's just all it is like you're playing an audio. It's crazy.
I'll tell you what, you got to be a special kind of stupid to go for this stuff. I mean, you know, if you think that's going to suffice somebody, hey, listen to my electric muscle car. It sounds just like a real engine.
I know. It's like I had a fake meat hamburger once at Burger King. It tasted like meat. It wasn't. But if you don't want to eat meat, then don't pretend you're eating meat. Well, if you don't want to drive a combustion engine, don't pretend you're driving a combustion engine. I can't explain it.
Hey,
yeah.
You got to get Boomer your Facebook Messenger open.
Oh, yeah?
And make sure that you're sitting down and not eating or drinking anything at the time.
Oh, no. What? Okay, I don't know that I don't know that I need to open up that messenger at all.
You're going to like it. I've sent you some drafts of what the Task Force Monkeypox Unicorn Monkey may look like.
Oh my gosh! All right, Jeff, appreciate
and what's
you.
Surprising huh? is, I and what's surprising is I found it almost immediately. There's more unicorn monkeys out there than you can imagine.
All right, Jeff, be careful on the road, brother, and hopefully one day soon you're not going to have to drive a big rig that has fake exhaust pipes on it. All right.
Oh, well, it'll be electric.
It'll be electric. All right, bud. Have a great day. All right, Boomer. I'm scared to death to start doing the Facebook Messenger. I just don't know about that.
It may be a little disastrous, but we might get a lot of laughs.
Just
too.
A little disastrous. I mean, if it's only a little disastrous, we can do
just
it, right? I mean, hey, what's a little disaster among friends, right? I don't know. We need to talk some more of that Task Force Monkeypox. By the way, just so y'all know, Boomer has experience in the T-shirt industry, and he did design a Task Force Monkeypox shirt. We got a little tweaking to do on it to make sure it's not misunderstood.
Just a little bit, but it's going to be pretty epic.
I agree. Extra large for me, bud. All right, folks, what a day. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Coming up next, you guys got the great one, Mark Levin. Boomer and I back here tomorrow, too. Have an amazing night.